Welcome once again to Food Conversations Season 3. Food Conversations, a program about everything to do with food, starting with, of course, planting seeds, and then moving on to growing, harvesting, distributing, and the most important part, eating, with a special emphasis on establishing food sovereignty in the Shoe Swap. I'm your host, Warren Bell, and you're listening to us on CKVS FM 93.7, the voice of the Shoe Swap, community radio for the people, with the people, and by the people. Before we continue, I'd like to acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkwepmik people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Today, we're going to do something different. Today, we're going to review an interview that I had with Lana Popham, BC's Minister of Agriculture, Food and Fisheries, which took place on March the 28th at the time of the official opening ceremony of the Zest Food Hub. Now, I've got to tell you in advance, the sound quality is not perfect and it's entirely my fault. I had the microphone around backwards and so you'll hear me well, but with the minister, you're going to have to pay more attention. However, Tom Grady is working hard to make sure that everything is fine, and Jeanette Clement, our station manager, has already made some changes in the sound quality. So it's a very engaging conversation that we had, that I and the minister had. So I think you'll find it still pretty fascinating. So let's start off by answering the question, who is Lana Popham? Lana was born in Regina, but raised on Quadra Island, which is the largest, I don't know if you know the coast well, but it's the largest of the Discovery Islands at the north end of what we now, again, call the Salish Sea, and it's at the east end of Johnstone Strait. The island was a thriving Coast Salish community from time immemorial, as we say. It's the largest island in that group. It's over 300 kilometers squared, which is not a huge area, but it's sizable. It's not a heavily populated place. The population today is about 4,000 max. It's isolated in that you have to get there by a ferry, which was only established in 1960, 8 years before Lana Popham was born, and you can do the math. It's sort of one of those things you might call a do-it-yourself, self-sufficiency-oriented community where growing your own food and fishing for food was pretty much a way of life. And I think you'll find that that shaped the minister's perspective on things quite a bit. Lana Popham was interested in urban planning when she was a kid and probably meant you'd go to a city to do it. And she took a degree in geography at UBC. Then she moved permanently to South Saanich in 1996 and co-founded with her husband the Barking Dog Vineyard. And you can imagine where that name comes from, which was, in fact, the very first certified organic vineyard on Vancouver Island. Now, there are more today, but she was a pioneer in that respect. And when you start up a small business of growing food, whatever form it is, you get to learn some lessons pretty quick. But she progressed very well, and at one time was even managing a crew that went around to other vineyards to help, you know, manage them and work on them as well, all through the Saanich Peninsula. She's been a long-time advocate for food producers in Saanich, and I'm just going to list off some of the things she was doing over the years, the bodies that she was part of. She served on the Saanich Planning, Transportation and Economic Development Committee, the Peninsula Agricultural Commission. She was president of the Vancouver Island Grape Growers Association. She was chair of the Certification Committee for the Islands Organic Producers Association, which is the private body that farmers set up themselves to certify them in terms of organic standards. The government in BC has not yet got a service for organic farmers to do the certification for them. She was also a member of the Investment Agriculture Board. She wasn't just interested in food issues. In 2005, she was involved in the 100 Kilometer Less campaign, and that was a campaign to have people eliminate 100 kilometers a week from their driving habits. She also campaigned in 2008 to ban plastic shopping bags in the Capital Region District, which is the area around Victoria. She was elected, first time she ran, in 2009. It was a very close race. She was the only woman candidate at that time, and she's been returned to office ever since. She's been in four elections and won them all. And I have a feeling it's because she is eminently suited to being a representative for the agricultural community. For the first 8 years in office, she was the opposition critic for agriculture, and she took the opportunity to travel all over the province of BC, meeting farmers, agricultural organizations, food advocacy groups, and championing, despite the resistance from the government of the day, the BC Liberal government, championing the Buy BC program, a loosening up of meat sales regulations, which had forbidden farmers to sell at their farm gate, and advocating strenuously for the institutional procurement of local food, that schools and government and other public institutions buying local food. All of which, I think, are behaviors and initiatives that everyone listening to this show would see as a really good thing to be doing. One of the things she also advocated for, but was not unable to bring forward until she became the actual minister, was the phasing out of mink farming by 2025. The mink farming industry has had a very checkered industry with respect to animal cruelty issues, with respect to infections that have run rampant through the mink in the farming community. It's been opposed by First Nations representatives for decades. And it was also, interestingly, a repository for COVID-19 infection. The infection in humans was also transmitted to and stored, if you like, in the mink in mink farming operations. After she was elected in 2009, she joined in a campaign to oppose old-growth logging on Vancouver Island and in the Lower Mainland. And in fact, she was featured in a 2011 documentary called Peace Out, where she spoke out, this time in opposition, against the Site C dam, something that unfortunately her government has now become a supporter of. But we'll see what happens about that in the future. She was and is a firm defender of the Agricultural Land Reserve and reinstating agricultural extension officers. Now, extension officers are scientists who are hired by the government to go out in the field with farmers and bring the latest scientific research on growing things to the farmers, and of course listening to farmers who have often some very pragmatic suggestions to make to people with an academic background. And the relationship has always been a very powerful one, and she's actively supported that, both in opposition and now, of course, as a minister in the government of the day. She opposed the genetically engineered Arctic apple. The Arctic apple was designed to not go brown after you cut it, which is cosmetically interesting, but in terms of food value, has no relevance whatsoever. It was a bit of a move to try and appeal to people who didn't know anything about food but liked buying apples, to give them an apple that never appeared to start to self-digest, which is the brownness of it. She's also been a leading proponent of protecting both native pollinators and the European honeybee on Vancouver Island. So her support of agriculture and related environmental activities has been consistent and broad-based over the years, and something that is a bit unusual in ministers. It's particularly also unusual that her background is in growing food, and that has, I think, influenced her perspective from the very beginning and made her a much more effective minister, in my opinion. While in opposition and once she became the minister, she lobbied for increased government support for agriculture. And one thing she did and advocated before and carried out when she became minister was rejoining the two areas of the Agricultural Land Reserve. The BC Liberal government had split them in half, and the northern half was designed to have a different set of rules that encouraged industrial development, because in northeastern BC, it is the center of fracking for methane, which is called natural gas. And it was not anything to do with agriculture. I think Lana Papa recognized the inappropriateness of this division of the agricultural land reserve into two. And one of the first acts she undertook when she became minister was to reverse this and unify the agricultural land reserve throughout the entire province. But listeners should know this. The Agricultural Land Commission was compelled under the BC Liberals to hand over the management of land use in northeastern BC to the BC Oil and Gas Commission. Now, the BC Oil and Gas Commission has only one purpose, and that is to foster development of the oil and gas industry. In other words, the fossil fuel industry that has become such a problematic component of the climate crisis that we're now dealing with. It's not well understood throughout this province that the Agricultural Land Commission handed over this responsibility for land development in one of the richest grain-growing areas in British Columbia, which is the Peace River area, to an oil and gas commission that fosters expanded work in the oil and gas industry. It's something that we probably should bear in mind, and someday we will find this doesn't actually happen. Now, in a minute, we're going to hear from Lana Popham herself, the Minister of Agriculture, Food and Fisheries. And you'll understand as you hear these segments from the interview that she's a very hands-on minister. And you'll really understand better when you hear her open our conversation with a lovely anecdote about her interaction with a dairy farmer in the Fraser Valley during the atmospheric river flooding phenomenon. But first, so here we are with the first section of the interview with Lana Popham.
I am delighted to be talking to Lana Popham, BC's Minister of Agriculture, and there's other parts to your name as well.
There is, agriculture and food.
Which is a very good thing to link together.
Absolutely.
I had the good fortune to meet you briefly yesterday and at some other agricultural gatherings, but today, could we perhaps start with an engaging anecdote? You talked about dropping in on a farmer and finding out some things about his life about how high the water ran on the cattle when you actually got to see what was going on.
Sure. So when the floods came, I started getting direct messages from farmers all over the Fraser Valley. And they were sending pictures, and of course they were texting me their immediate situation. And all I wanted to do was just to get out there. Of course, the last thing people need is a politician showing up in the middle of a crisis, taking up space. And so I had to wait for about 12 days before I could actually get out there. At that point, I couldn't get into the worst areas because they were obviously still flooded, but I was able to meet some farmers on the side of the road. At that point, the look of desperation and panic that I could still see in their eyes cemented in me that no matter what, we had to help do whatever we could. So I went back home and I communicated with the federal minister of agriculture and I said, can you please come out? And she said, absolutely. So the next trip came out with the federal minister, and we ended up at a farm that had been very near where the breach was for the flood. So they got quickly flooded and the waters came and they were high. About 200 dairy cattle, and they were able to move 100 of them out the first day, left 100 behind, not expecting to come back and find them alive, but they were alive the next day. They were able to get the rest of the cattle out, and they were bringing cattle onto buddy dairy farms. And as soon as the second load arrived, one of the cows laid down immediately and gave birth to a calf. Immediately. She knew she was waiting to get to a safer spot. It seemed like. So the farmer's family, there's volunteers that cared for this brand new calf, and then they named it Miracle. And just a couple days before Christmas, they were able to bring it back to its home farm. And so I went out last week with the premier to that farm. I really wanted to see what was going on there. And regardless of how devastating it was, that farm family like many other farm families, right. We're extremely resilient. And when we hear that word, I mean, everyone's using it. What does it mean? Mm-hmm. Well, it means when we showed up last week, I said, how are you doing? And he said, we're doing great. Everything's going to be fine. And we got to meet the calf, Miracle, who's much bigger now.
Yes.
And just to see the look of, in this farmer's eyes particularly, moved from being in a, I guess, panic and being devastated, that there's hope there again.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me going as Minister of Agriculture.
To see, well, also, you've been an organic farmer yourself, and that must give you a kind of a leg up in understanding what's going on in the farmer's specific world.
Yeah, well, it definitely gives me the knowledge of how tough it is to make a living as a farmer. I had a roadside stand when I first started, and I think I remember putting up a bunch of tomato plants onto the roadside stand. And of course, when you initially start a roadside stand, you spend your entire day, instead of farming, is watching the stand to see if anyone's going to stop by. And someone did, and they bought one tomato plant for $2. And I went up and got the $2 off the stand, and I came back, and I remember saying, you know what, that's the best $2 I've ever made. It was so satisfying. You think about how many hours it took to get that tomato plant to that point.
Your first date with $2.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I understand the challenges for sure. I understand the economics of it. But mostly, so I farmed for a decade before I was minister, but then I spent 2 terms in opposition as the agriculture critic, and that's really where I learned the most.
I think that brief segment gives you a pretty clear idea of how dedicated Lana Popham is to not just advancing food and agriculture in this province, but having personal relationships with farmers. She understands their language, and they understand that she gets it. She doesn't have to have everything explained to her. So it's clearly more than just a political role, and I'm sure that's why she's been so successful as the Minister of Agriculture and has retained that portfolio throughout her career as the minister in the government of the day. The next brief segment reveals that rather than treating her years in opposition as a setback, Lana Popham, like a true farmer, in my opinion, was not afraid to learn from the challenges from her political rivals, just like learning from the weather gods. You don't argue with them, you just learn something from them. And applying these lessons in her own work. So here's our second segment with Lana Popham.
I was farming on Vancouver Island, southern Vancouver Island, a bit of its own ecosystem there with its own built-in market, quite supportive community, and a little bit ahead of things when it came to certified organic marketplace. But I took off the first chance I got as critic and went right into the interior and kept going. And I think I traveled nonstop for 8 years so I could see every part of agriculture in the province, including the ocean farming. And
the 100 ocean products.
That's right. And that has been my training wheels to be minister. And I would, as much as being in opposition is a little bit difficult at times, I would not have traded those 8 years for anything, because I was much more prepared to be the minister, a greater understanding of how it works.
You're an observer of political decision making, and you can see what's good and what's not good, what's working and what's not working.
Well, it's not every politician that says it was a great experience to be on the opposite side of the aisle in the political process, but Lana Popham has just told you that's what it was for her. Now, today, all politicians, even former deniers of climate change, are finally talking about it. The climate crisis, the climate emergency, these are phrases that we hear increasingly instead of just bland climate change. Well, the latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the sixth assessment report, which was released on April the 4th, 2022, and simultaneously published in 6 languages, had 278 scientist authors, over 18,000 references to scientific publications, and was guided by over 59,000 comments from reviewers. So this is pretty authoritative. The report stated clearly the following: without immediate and deep emissions reductions across all sectors, limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees centigrade is beyond reach. Now, that's blunt and to the point. The report also goes on to say agriculture, forestry, and other land use can provide large-scale emissions reductions and also remove and store carbon dioxide at scale. Adding further, climate change is a result of more than a century of unsustainable energy and land use, lifestyles, and patterns of consumption and production. This report shows how taking action can now move us towards a fairer, more sustainable world. That's the context in which most informed public officials need to observe the work that they do. The report had some encouraging things to say. It said that three actions, reducing the destruction of forests and other ecosystems, restoring them, and improving the management of working lands such as farms, are among the top five most effective strategies for mitigating carbon emissions by 2030. So the role of land use and particularly the role of farming can be very significant in addressing the issue of climate change, not just adapting to the effects of climate change, but actually doing things that will reduce the process of climate change. The summer of 2021, of course, with the heat dome, massive wildfires, including, of course, the fire that completely destroyed Lytton, following in the fall by atmospheric rivers, debris flows, flooding, and the breaching of roads throughout the lower third of the province, well, the climate crisis is on us. Lana Popham and the government of which she is part have taken steps to support farmers at this time and to take the climate crisis into consideration in all decision-making. So here's another segment where she talks about that process of support and climate adaptation and mitigation.
You use the word resilience, and everybody's talking, as you said, about resilience these days. And the reason, of course, is that we're dealing with some fairly major shifts in climate patterns, and they are causing us some grief and some sense that we have to do something about this. And one of the things that you did as an immediate, the government did as an immediate response to the harms that were caused by the heat dome and atmospheric rivers and the washing out of various roads here and there by debris flows, and that was a support system for farmers. Why don't you talk about that a bit?
Sure. So for years, there's been this historical support of business risk management programs within the Ministry of Agriculture. They're cost-shared with the federal government, and so if there's some kind of interruption in production, there's a whole variety of things that can happen when you're farming, and there's insurance programs provincially that can kick in to help out. But since 2017, since I became minister, we've been having these, I guess you could call them ad hoc programs, because every time some kind of disaster happens, we have to dig down deep and find funds from somewhere else.
Some of which disasters are very hard to predict.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're 2017, we're like, oh, I can't believe this happened. But now, you know, 2020, 2021, now it's like, it's almost like everyday business is the next disaster. Obviously, our world is changing quite quickly. We see climate change weather events that are not going to stop. And so when we think of fires, heat domes, the flood, these are weather-related events and they're climate-related events. But along with that, we've had a pandemic. And so there's a ton of reasons why our supply chain has been interrupted over the last 4 years. And the most important thing for me as minister and for our government is to have a resilient food system. And again, we're using the word resilient, but what that means to me as minister is that we need to look at all the pinch points in our system.
Sure.
Where
the long transport routes.
Absolutely. And then we've got these great regions of our province that are very productive, but we've got some really interesting topography to get through as we traverse between these regions. And those are seem to be the pinch points. It's transportation routes and it's vulnerable spots, whether they be canyons, side rivers, whatever.
Yeah, we got one of those provinces goes up and down.
Yeah, which is our advantage as well, because we've got an ability to be resilient. If one area gets knocked out, we can depend on another area. But what we really need to be able to figure out is how can those places be self-sufficient for a number of days.
You can hear the concern that Minister Popham expresses about dealing with these big issues. It's not just a portfolio that she's taken on to advance her political career. She's really directly engaged in addressing the things that are happening to agriculture and the role that agriculture can play in addressing the changes that we're subject to. We're going to divert a little bit now to another reason that this interview took place, and that is, as I mentioned earlier, that in her role as Minister of Agriculture and Food and Fisheries, Lana Popham came to Salmon Arm on March 25th to open the Zest Food Hub. The Zest has been in operation since November 29th of last year, but this was the official opening ceremony. So what is a food hub? A food hub is a facility that provides an opportunity for local food producers to process their foods for retail sale, making baked goods, syrups, jams, soups, salsas, and more. And it also is a place where caterers can come and prepare food. In fact, on the day of the opening ceremony, there was a lovely meal prepared in the food hub, where the minister and a group of other people who'd come, notables, including the mayor and Tracy Edwards, the director of the food hub, all sat down to a wonderful meal prepared right in the building. And it's a way to distribute food production and food services throughout the province, not having them all concentrated in the lower mainland. And that's to protect against the inevitable destructive impacts of climate change. Climate change is not going to go away. We have to come to terms with it. It also enhances food self-sufficiency, food security, and food sovereignty, all the things that Food Conversations, the program, stands for and is trying to enhance. So it's the food hub is an important part of the food community, and it's also something that is really addressing the real-world issues that we're dealing with right now. Now, our particular food hub, like all of them in the province, and there's a number of them already, it's loaded with industrial-strength equipment, the kind of stuff that every homeowner would dream about having if you had 400 guests suddenly drop in and asking for food. So it's got a commercial dishwasher, it's got large-scale cold storage, and it's got an arrangement of large-scale utensils and food processing equipment that really it boggles the mind when you actually see it and see it in action, such as a machine that will bottle 20 bottles in 1 minute of some food material of some sort. Now, the manager of the Zest Food Hub, Tracy Edwards, is going to be on a future show, which we hope to do live in the actual food hub itself. And she's going to be talking about the day-to-day operation of the food hub and in detail what it does and what it has done already. But today, I'd like you to listen to Lana Popham describing why food hubs are important and why the government wants to build more of them around the province.
When the debris flows took out several of the highways, most of the major highways, arterial north and south, there were empty shelves in Salmon Arm. And there were some spaces that were not empty. And the non-empty spaces were the ones from producers in the area who are already supplying. We have some very progressive retailers here who are buying local food and putting them on the shelves. And that's where the shelves were filled. So part of the resilience process that I know you're working on is to establish a more distributive kind of source of food for people. In other words, you enhance food security and ultimately even food sovereignty by having more than one site. Let's talk about food hubs, because that's what we're about.
Here.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so the food hubs.
And just for listeners, I just want you to know that Lana Popham came here to open the Zest Food Hub in Salmon Arm, and it was a wonderful ceremony. Anyway, food hubs.
So food hubs are part of this equation that we're creating. So we do know that the shelves were bare in many locations, especially at the beginning of the pandemic. And why? It's because we're not creating products within these regions. We're depending on food being brought in. Fair enough. that's the way the system has been working. We're not self-sufficient as a province. We bring in over 50% of food that we're eating, but we don't necessarily have to.
That's
it's
right.
Just that that's the way it's been done.
Yeah, and started so back in the 70s and 80s, and we're still doing.
Yeah, so if you want to change that system, it takes a lot of work, and it takes a bit of time, but you can do it. And the food hubs are one way of making that connection. And so, since we're in Salmon Armic, there's an incredible pasta maker in this region. Well, pasta was one of the things that we ran out of during, that was missing off the shelves in the grocery stores. I knew about this pasta company, and so I immediately called them and said, how can you get into more retailers? And I started to see this pasta showing up on the South Island, because it was one of the only pastas that the grocery stores could source. I was calling grocery stores to say, call this pasta company, I'm sure they can help out. So that's what we need to do. We need to find the products that we depend on, figure out if we can make them here, and if we can, then support the food entrepreneurs that want to do it. And that's the food hub system.
One of the underlying reasons for localizing food production and distribution, of course, is that climate change doesn't do well when we burn a lot of fossil fuels, and to get food from 5,000 kilometers away means you don't just get the food, you get the greenhouse gases that are produced on the way coming here. Plus the delivery system can be fragmented by weather events. So obviously food hubs play a big role. Why don't you describe sort of what a typical food hub is? Not that there is such a thing, but as close as you can come.
Okay. They're amazing things, and I certainly didn't invent this on my own. They have existed, but they haven't existed in a government model, which means the government is investing in them. So the government isn't in the business of buying real estate or purchasing buildings, but we can certainly purchase equipment to fill these hubs up.
And you can facilitate.
We can facilitate it. I always like to say we can be the wind at their back until they're ready to fly on their own. So it's a shared use commercial kitchen space, and they all have their own kind of way of doing business, but really you can get a bunch of entrepreneurs that want to create food products. They don't have the money to invest in cutting edge equipment or the commercial kitchen space that has the certain levels of safety in order to be able to sell food. All of that is built into a food hub. Many of the food hubs are open 24 hours a day, so it allows for people to create their own job, whatever that is.
We learned today that there's a night shift at the Salmon Arm Zest food hub.
Exactly. And many of them are, whoever's renting the space can get access to the space on their own, so another person doesn't have to be here overseeing them. They basically are their own boss in their own space with a shared use equipment. And so they're billed for the time they're here. They don't pay for rent for a location. It's all incorporated into their hourly fee. And so it really works for people. And these are people that could be part-time entrepreneurs or full-time entrepreneurs. In Vancouver, we've seen full-time entrepreneurs outgrow their space in the food hub and move on to create their own standalone business. And so it can be a launch pad for a much bigger business, but then there's also food entrepreneurs that don't want to move on. They like having the space in the food hub, and that suits them just fine. And so it really works for all different types of work scenarios, and I think that's why it's going to work all around the province. It can be all different types of work scenarios, and I think that's why it's going to work all around the province. It can be working in a rural setting or an urban setting.
Well, you can see again how engaged Lana Popham is with the process of making the food system in all aspects adapt to the times and helping farmers along that way as real people. So political players don't get to choose what will happen in the world at large when they get elected. You can be elected and a war can start in a far-off place that has a big influence on your life, but you can't make the people who are doing that stop doing it just because it's inconvenient for you. Lana Popham has been minister while we have been struggling with the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as increasing impacts from climate change. But instead of being fazed by this turn of events, She has actually seen this as maybe causing pain for a lot of people, and she's acutely aware of that because she knows farmers personally, and she knows that particular pain. But also, it's resulted in a rapid advancement of action in the realm of social transformation. So let's listen to a little commentary from her about how that has actually been happening.
When you were speaking at the Co-op and Agriculture Conference in Kamloops recently, you said when somebody, you're introduced to somebody who walked into two big crises, the COVID crisis and the climate change crisis and all the impact of that. And you said, and I thought it was a very interesting and bold comment, you said, well, I wouldn't have wanted to be anywhere else at a time like this. Why don't you amplify on that a little bit?
Mentioned that because over and over again since November, people have commented and they've said to me, you must be disappointed that this all happened on your watch. You waited so long to be the Minister of Agriculture and now all of this has happened. But I wouldn't have wanted to be anywhere else. And the reason is because even at the best of times, farming is tough. And I've gotten to know the agriculture community around BC so well that I want to be by their side, whether in good times and in bad times. Mm-hmm. And if there's something I can facilitate to make the tough times easier, then that makes me feel like I'm doing my job. And so, yeah, there's nothing else I'd rather do. You know, the reason I got into politics was because of agriculture, with a far-off dream of perhaps becoming a minister of agriculture. And politics is sometimes a pretty tough business, but it's still my absolute dream job.
Yeah, you get to have an influence that's proportionately greater in terms of facilitation and creating a framework for things to happen that isn't available anywhere else.
No, and you know, people in BC are awesome, and so the ideas that just come from being on the ground and being on a farm is really what drives my mandate as well. My mandate is grow BC, feed BC, and buy BC, but it's fairly loose, and so I can just plug in any good idea that I hear about, which literally drives my staff crazy, but now that they've gotten to know me, they know that any day could bring another 400 good ideas, but those good ideas are coming from farmers and people around
sure.
the province, and so I'm excited every day when I wake up to know, you know, every day is different, but I'm not going to lie, the last year has been really difficult. It's mm-hmm. been really challenging, mostly because I've had to watch people that I care about so much suffer a lot, and that's tough.
I cannot imagine anybody in this province who would be anything other than delighted to have a minister who actually takes their concerns seriously. She has, from the beginning, been focused, of course, on agriculture and food production, but it's because she knows it. And we're used to people in government who have some kind of job, but they really want to be in the government. Lana has admitted that she had an ambition far down the road, maybe, to be in a government position, but she really just wanted to help farmers. And you can hear from the way she described her relationship with farmers during some of the changes they've been going through that she couldn't not be out there trying to help them. And I think that's probably how every minister in every government should be. If you have a Ministry of Legal Affairs, then you should probably have a lawyer running. If you have a Minister of Health, maybe you should have a physician or maybe a nurse in charge of affairs. Anyway, we're going to move on to another segment. Probably everybody remembers John F. Kennedy saying something about the Chinese word for crisis being composed of two symbols, the first one representing danger and the second one representing opportunity. Well, it's actually the second one. The first one does represent danger, but the second one is more accurately translated as a point of change, a change point, something where there has to be a shift. And it's the danger, the first part of this symbol, that signifies that very important point, and that is that change has to take place to respond to this danger. Lana Popham's next comments clearly reveal that she sees the world this way, and that that is an accurate observation. Over the last several years, for example, governments have been finally compelled to work on both preventing climate change and adapting to its impacts. The change of pace, from her point of view, has been significantly accelerated by some of the hardships that have come upon us, and in particular come upon the farming community. So here's what she has to say about this acceleration, and interestingly, at the very end, a little comment about the presence of women in making it happen.
If you were looking to the future from the vantage of the present, which is kind of coming out of one of those crises and probably facing more of the other, the climate side, when you look in the distance, what do you see beckoning for you to go to that you think would really make as much of a difference as one could possibly make? How do you see things moving ahead into a better space?
We're on our way to a better space, and the disasters that have happened are allowing us to fast forward a lot of that work. We were on that road of resiliency and self-sufficiency and a more regional food system before all of this happened, but now the consumers absolutely are on board. I've never felt so much support for the agriculture industry as I have over this last year. Mm. People understand what food security is. When I first became minister in 2017, I sat at a federal provincial territorial meeting with ministers from across Canada and at the federal level. And for one thing, I was the only female at the table. So I was the first female minister of agriculture for BC and the only one in Canada at that point in time. Now, we have a federal minister who's female, and then I've got a lot of colleagues in other provinces who are also women. There's a different understanding of what agriculture is right across the board. We can use words like food security without getting any eye rolls. People know what it means. I do joke around with my colleagues across the country that, you know, nationally we use the term agri-food, but I say people don't sit around their house and say, we need to make a list of agri-foods that we need
for supper tonight.
For supper. They say we need to go grocery shopping. So let's use language that people understand and
indeed
can connect to.
For sure.
Because that's what we're supposed to be doing. And so we're just watching climate change get incorporated into our federal provincial agreements is very important. That's evolving very quickly. The idea of regional food systems is not just a BC thing anymore, or a Quebec thing, or an East Coast thing. It's right across the board. And I think one of the neatest moments was that provinces are starting to ask British Columbia how we're doing certain things, like Feed BC, which is moving more BC food into our institutional buying, so hospitals, post-secondary, all of that. And New Brunswick, actually, so we have Feed BC, they have Feed New Brunswick. So that's fun when that kind of thing starts to happen. My staff are being invited to conferences to kind of roll out and explain how Feed BC works, and that's good. We're inspiring other places too, as well as improving things in BC.
You can hear Lana Popham's concern and her sense of history as she talks about some of the changes she's reviewed with us so far. In the last segment of the interview, I picked up on her remark about the presence of women in the process of the transformation of the food systems. And she had some interesting things when I asked her about this. She had some interesting things to say about what women bring to the political process that I think you'll find interesting.
I'd like to kind of come to the end of this visit with you talking a little bit more about the fact that so many of the key positions in this transformation that's within the food sector, but also in many other sectors inside, and maybe the whole of humanity right now is going through a bit of a transformative experience. And talk a little bit about the role that women are playing in this and how it's really accelerating in many respects the process of transformation.
That's a good question, and I probably wouldn't have been able to answer that 2 years ago even. But now that I see it coming to fruition, our government has a very strong mandate around board appointments and equality. And I see chairs of, for example, supply management boards. Now women are the chairs. Some of those are government appointed, but some of them are industry appointed. But I appointed one of the first females chair of the egg marketing board in 2017. And it was a shift for the industry. And it wasn't as comfortable, I don't think, as people wanted it to be. But now that we're there and we're 5 years out, it's normal.
What do you think that women bring to this kind of transformative process, but also to the way it happens, that is kind of special?
So I have great working relationships with men and women, but women have a different way of communicating with each other, and I think that's where I see the strength coming, is that it's a different type of communication, it's a more personal type of communication, and it's kind of like, let's just get down to business and get things done. And I love that, and that's the relationship I have with the federal minister right now. When she came out and flew around the Fraser Valley with me, we agreed, not just with a handshake, but with a hug, we're going to fix this together, and that's what we're trying to do, so yeah.
Lana Papa, Minister of Agriculture and Food, a well-known word. It's been a delight talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, there you are, my interview with Lana Popham. Interestingly, it was supposed to be a 10-minute interview, but it ended up being extended to nearly 25 minutes. I think both of us were having a good time. So you've got a picture of our Minister of Agriculture. And just to review some of the things that are parts of her life that have made her such a good minister in this particular respect. Raised on an island community where self-sufficiency was part of what you did, as a matter of fact. An early interest in planning communities and then a degree in geography. Moving to South Saanich, which is on Vancouver Island, is a very, island communities have a special kind of sense of having to manage their own affairs. Then starting up the Barking Dog Vineyard, the first organic vineyard on the island, and hiring people to go around and manage other organic vineyards when those were starting to be in existence. And then all the work she did with food advocacy and social engagement, particularly in regard to food, being president of the Vancouver Island Grape Growers Association and the chair of the certification committee for the island's Organic Producers Association. That meant she was involved in the structure of the food industry, or the food sector, we could call it. And then she didn't just involve herself with food, she involved herself with things like campaigns to drive less, get rid of plastic shopping bags, and increasing in respect to food, not just the growing of food, but also having food part of the government mandate, so that the government was taking a role in initiating the expansion of food and the greater efficiency and adaptation of food to changing times that we live in. I think getting rid of mink farming, which was a real challenge because the industry's been around for a long time, was an important thing. By 2025, this way of raising fur-bearing animals in captivity, which has never been popular in many circles, except the people, I guess, who wore mink fur, is no longer going to be part of the BC community. And then on to being minister and for winning her seat in four successive elections, despite a lot of changing times that we are all living through. I think we're lucky in this province to have a minister of agriculture who understands the issues around food, has a sense of community with the people who grow and process and distribute and eat food, and therefore can be a more direct resource person for the food industry. I mentioned along the way that she had changed some of the regulations regarding meat sales, and that means that farmers who had been for many, many years selling food off their farms can now do that again. There is a move afoot to have distributive abattoir services, which would be smaller, more less machine-like in the way they dispatch animals and prepare them for their meat for eating. So there's lots of ways in which she's bringing a kind of sensitivity and also an awareness around food and the changes we're all going through to the work she does. Now, with respect to a future show, we are going to do one show, hopefully live next week, from the Zest Food Hub. It will be an interview with Tracy Edwards, but on site, so that we can talk, and you can hear the sounds from the various kinds of machines and devices that are in the food hub. It's a fascinating place. It's when I first heard about a food hub, I thought it was some kind of glorified organic market where you could go and sell food, but not at all. It's a place for farmers to take the food that they have grown on their land and turn it into a value-added product which can be sold in local stores and retail spaces. The other show we're going to work on is having Sue Moore, who was on our show last week, come to the studio and answer your questions about growing food. Sue has been growing food since she was 5 years old, and she's considerably older than five right now. She's same age as me, and I won't tell anybody my age because then you'll know her age. But she is steeped in gardening and growing food for in any size, anywhere from a 26-acre parcel that she had, food garden she had at one point, down to a backyard garden. So if you have questions about growing food in your own space, we'd like to have Sue answer those questions for you as best she can. It's kind of a local version of the Brian Minter show on BC Today on CBC Radio. No harm plugging our sister station, public station. So if you have a question about something you've been growing and it's not going as well as you wanted it to, or you'd like to branch out into something new, or you just want to get started with a garden, you want to know what's the best way to prepare the soil so that when you start planting, you get a good outcome and a good crop, then we'd invite you to contact the station. And here is the email address. We're going to do this by email because we don't have the seven staff members running a show like the CBC Radio does. So we're going to ask you to send your questions in by email. And here's the email place to send them. It's info@voiceoftheshoeshop.ca. Pardon me for that background interruption. It's info, I-N-F-O, at voiceoftheshoeshop, all one word, .ca. So I'll say that again. It's info, I-N-F-O, at one word, voiceoftheshoeshop. So you run it all together without punctuation, and then at the end you put a dot and you put in CA. So info at voiceoftheshoeshop.ca. And the reason I'm saying it over several times is because I have been on far too many, listened to far too many programs today. And the phone number is 870. And if you didn't get that, it's 870. And by the time you're scratching your head and pulling out your hair, the show is over. So one more time, info at voiceoftheshoeshop.ca. If you have any questions that a master gardener with decades and decades of experience could answer, then you'll have an opportunity to hear Sue Moore tell us what she thinks about your question and answers she has that would help you do some growing of a significant nature. So that's the show today. It's been very good to have you along, and we hope to hear you next week and in future weeks. And that's all for now.